Hello, everyone. This is John Miller, the Vice President of Marketing and Co-Founder for Marketo. Thanks for joining us today. I am joined by two great experts on landing pages from Marketing Sherpa, Stefan Tornquist, the Research Director, as well as Tim McAtee, the Senior Analyst, as I said, from Marketing Sherpa. Today, we're going to be covering some of the most interesting findings from Marketing Sherpa's recently updated landing page handbook. Just one little bit of housekeeping before we get started. If you have not received the slides, please send an email to info@marketo.com. That's info@marketo.com. And with that, with no further ado, I'd like to hand it over to Stefan and Tim.
Thanks, John. All right, well, let's turn to slide number two and take a very quick look at where some of the data that we'll be looking at and the examples came from. Primarily, we conducted a very large survey of on-the-ground real-life marketers, over 4,000 of them, with a rough split of 55% in B2B, 45% in B2C. We'll be focusing on real B2B results today for the folks on the call. We also conducted a number of consumer surveys and lab tests, partnered research. Those are studies where a different research house will bring some different skill. Like on the bottom of the page, you'll see the eye tracking heat maps. So we'll partner with organizations, design the study, and analyze it after the fact. Now, for this handbook, perhaps the most important source of information were the case studies that Sherpa has conducted over the years, over 800 and counting, and so many of those focus on landing pages and really were what informed the writing of the first book and of this one, because it's those practical examples that showed us initially, wow, landing pages are really one of the most important, if not the most important part of the process, and have sparked the writing of these two books. So with that, let's get into the results themselves. So here we're looking at some of the top tests, and Tim, by the looks of it, things are getting better.
No, absolutely, Stefan. One of the things you're seeing here is that there are kind of two rough categories that these tests are falling into. One is fairly easy to implement design-based tests where people are moving around creative elements. They're tweaking their registration forms, simple things like that. The other sorts of tests that, in this case, our best performing test, the pay-per-click search dynamic change test, these are a little bit more tech savvy. They do involve implementing some code and actually getting some changes made to your website to more dynamically provide content to people based on where they're coming from, what they're interested, how far they are in the purchase process, that sort of thing, just to give people what they want when they want it.
Great. And what we're going to do now is go through examples of each one of these. And I think what they'll underscore for you is that even in these cases where you might be thinking, we're just not the kind of organization that's going to get the sort of budget to conduct, say, dynamic search tests, I think what you'll see is that the results from these more expensive tests, and when I say more expensive, these are not break the bank type of things, but there is a difference between doing an A/B test of creative elements and implementing dynamic site changes based on analytics. But as I think you'll see, these changes really are worth it, and ultimately will prove themselves to be more than worth the budget. So let's take a look at the first one, dynamic search copy on slide four. Now, I know you're thinking, well, this is a B2C example. Why would it apply to us? This is just one of many examples, and so many of them are in B2B, and we've absolutely found these things to hold true. Now, in this example, there was one change made to this page raised conversions by over 48%, and the change was simply adding that line in the middle of the sort of the middle left of this example, where it says you searched for Stratocaster guitar on Google. Now, there are a lot of different ways that you can change your site dynamically based on the search phrase. This is a programming term. It simply means that someone clicks on a search ad or a search link, and they come to your landing page. And when they do it, your page alters to adapt itself to that search. Maybe a headline changes. Maybe the imagery changes. Really, the choices are infinite. But the reason we chose this example is because it's so simple. All it does is orient the person back to their search. It just says, you know, the search you just conducted, this is relevant content. And we've seen in multiple eye tracking tests, usability studies, that when people arrive on a landing page, you've got a precious short amount of time to establish relevance. And this simple change was enough to affect conversion by 48%. So I think if you start doing the math on the increasing your conversion rate by that to that degree, very quickly it will justify the necessary budget. All right, let's look at the next example, and this is on registration forms. We're now on slide number 5. Now, a point that we've been making for marketers, and this is especially true for B2B folks, is that your marketing doesn't end when somebody gets to the form. So many organizations, that you know, they're obsessed with their media buys and their messaging and the creative, and they do a lot of great work getting people into the funnel, and then the people who are about to take the action, they're rushing down the funnel, and then they hit a bad form. And that's where you lose so many people. And there are a number of best practices, but one thing I would caution folks against is there's no golden rule. For some organizations, you'll find that it makes sense to have more questions and have a higher qualified lead as a result. For others, volume makes the difference. Now, there are definitely some best practices which will get you more people moving through that form. The question is who those people are. So in this example that we're looking at, the shorter example certainly proved to be the winner. By about 37%, that shorter form on the right-hand side outperformed the longer form. And to do that, they went from 15 entry fields down to 7. And again, a shorter form, a more streamlined form, will get a higher volume of leads, but it's really up to the organization. You know, if we ask questions like, how many employees do you have, what is the budget you've got for this upcoming project, those are the kinds of questions that, number one, are going to reduce conversion, and number two, this is something we've found increasingly, it's going to reduce the validity of the answers. Basically, after name and email, which are both generally given as valid, the more complex the question, the deeper you're poking, the greater the degree of invalidity. So that in a recent survey, we found over 50% said that when they were asked about those questions like budget and number of employees, time to purchase, when asked those questions, over 50% said, you know, I don't really give accurate answers to those. And very often it's because they don't have them yet. You know, we're all dealing with long sales cycles. Chances are very good that they're in a research phase and they don't have a budget. They don't have a timeline. They're not necessarily lying to you. They simply don't know. So especially if those questions are required, you're going to get some bad data and you're going to get some people abandoning the process. All right, so let's move on to our next page. And, Tim, I've been talking a lot. What's 22% mean?
22% exclamation point means that 22% of everyone that we surveyed out of a little over 4,000 people still have a reset button sitting next to their submit button. And it's kind of this weird thing that came from, you know, sort of back in the early days of computing, when you have a single user submitting multiple forms over and over again, and it was just easier to reset the form to clear the data, you know, when they were inputting multiple forms. For whatever reason, that just came along with newer forms for absolutely no good reason at all. So you see all these forms now with reset buttons that get hit accidentally by customers coming through. I know in my own experience as a customer, if I go through and fill out a form and then manage to wipe it all out by hitting a clear or reset button, chances are I'm not going to go through and put in my information a second time. I'm just going to bail. So for, you know, that 22% of people that still have these things, they really need to get rid of them. They're just getting in their own way.
Absolutely. And I don't want to pick on B2B folks here, but in my experience, it's B2B sites where you will most often find this legacy programming and forum pages that were very, very obviously designed by a programmer without a marketer's input. So, folks, don't let your marketing end at the landing page. Make sure it extends through that form. Okay, so let's move on to slide number 7. And what we're talking about here is that over 800 case studies that we've conducted over the years, most of those had some creative element that was tested. And the common thread that extends through all of those is iFlow. Anything that you can do to simplify and clarify a landing page, generally speaking, will produce better results. Now, there is one marketplace where that's not true, and that is if you happen to be serving Asian countries. There's a cultural difference, and if you've ever used Baidu and gone to just take a look at some of the pages that that are served in Chinese or Japanese, you'll see that they're extremely cluttered, which is hard for a Western eye to discern, but in fact works in the Asian market. So, assuming you're not doing that, you really got to think about iFlow and simplifying it. And so we're going to talk about three different ways of doing that. And let's move on to slide number 8. And Tim, do you want to talk us through the iFlow and the columns?
Sure. What this chart is showing us is the percent of marketers that we looked at in our observational study, where we actually went to 900-plus landing pages. And it's broken out by the percent of marketers who have that number of columns on their landing pages. So as we see it, you know, most of them are in the sort of 1 to 2 column range, with a few in the 3, and then you've got the stragglers out there with more than that. And the idea is that you really want as few columns as possible. Generally speaking, the more columns you have, the harder it is to, you know, for the human eye to sort of go through and consume it all. So that said, I mean, one of the things that we're finding here as we're breaking this out is that on the landing pages that we looked at that were coming from an email ad, they tend to be a little bit simpler, you know, 1 to 2 columns, a bit more prevalent. Whereas on pages that we landed on coming out of search queries, what happened there was that more often than not, they were a little bit, you know, more complicated, more chaotic than their email ad counterparts. And oftentimes, we'll see this later on, what happens is that people coming from email ads are generally going to a very specific page that's been designed to be a landing page, whereas people coming from search, oftentimes there's just a lack of communication between the search marketers and the website marketing people, and so there's less coherence between the two, and you wind up on pages oftentimes that weren't necessarily designed to be landing pages. Again, we'll see more of that later on.
Great points. One thing before moving on from this page, we found from our survey that over 20% of the marketers responding are living in a world where they're required for landing pages to match their site layout. That's probably coming from technology, whoever's managing the website. But that's a problem because your regular layout, your home page and all of those category pages are much more likely to have multiple columns. They're, you know, they're designed as a typical web page, and what makes a landing page effective is its focus around a single action. And so if you find that you're one of those companies constrained by that rule, it's worth going to the mat for that one because ultimately, you're held responsible for how much money you're producing, how many registrations, leads are being generated, and you need the best possible landing pages to do that. All right, let's move on to the next slide. And this particularly ugly slide talks to some of the most basic mistakes that we make, and that is that there's very often a conflict between our sense of what might look good or look interesting in terms of text design versus what really works best. So here are some of the very common and egregious examples that we see very frequently. Centered headlines, very difficult to read. We've proven that in usability and eye tracking studies. The second example, small typeface. A lot of folks are so worried about the fold that they condense their condense the size of their fonts down to the dreaded Verdana 8 or 10 point. If you are over 40 years old, it is difficult to read this. And you know, chances are the decision makers in your B2B process, it's a good chance they're over 40 years old, even in the internet world. So don't trust them to adjust font sizes using their browser. They're not going to bother. If they find a lot of small type that they find it a strain to read, they're going to move on. Next down, you do not want to use colored text. This is the blog world is full of this. It looks vaguely elegant. It's very 2005. But let's hope that it's not 2007, because it is harder to read colored text. It's especially hard to read colored text on another color background. So very often you'll see this light gray text on a blue background. You're not selling things through your blog. You are selling things through your landing pages, and that distinction needs to be very clear. Finally, and this is something that we do see dying out, this particular design choice, but the white text on a black background, save that for MySpace, because it really doesn't belong on a B2B landing page. Okay. iFlow and buttons. We're now on slide number 10. We talked a lot in the past about buttons and done a good bit of research into the very strong effect of testing the wording of buttons. So don't say submit, say add to shopping basket. Don't say click here to receive your free white paper. But in this round of testing, obviously you looked at how size affects things. Want to tell us about it?
Sure. I mean, it's just sort of a, I don't know, rule of design, I guess, where the bigger an item is, the more likely it is to get clicked, the more likely it is to get eyeballs. And for someone who's consuming your page for the first time, who's, you know, just glancing at it, you really want whatever it is that you want to be done to be obvious. You want that button to just pop out, to be huge. And even if it seems kind of big to you, it may not seem big to the end consumer. So just good rule of thumb. Walk back a few feet from your computer, look at your screen, and if it doesn't, if you can't read it, if it isn't clear, it's probably not big enough. So just keep that in mind when designing these things, and don't be afraid to boost up the size of your buttons.
Yeah, I think that Steve Krug, who's one of our favorite usability experts and has written a number of great books on the topic, says, you know, if he stands across the room and can't see the button, it's too small, or can't read the button. It's too small. So that's a good rule of thumb. So let's move on to slide number 11 on organic search landings. Tim, what are we looking at here?
Sure. We're looking at where organic searchers are coming from when they're coming into your site. And what we're seeing here is that, you know, vast majority of people searching organically are winding up on your interior pages. So again, whether it's, you know, paid or organic, you really need to be paying attention to where people are coming into your site. And if you have the kind of site where a lot of your internal pages wind up sort of being, you know, de facto landing pages, you really need to be paying attention to that and optimizing your interior pages to make sure that, you know, they can stand up to that scrutiny.
Excellent. All right, let's move on to slide number 12 and take a look at another place where organic search is becoming increasingly important, and that's at the intersection of public relations. If you're in business to business, chances are your PR doesn't extend a whole lot beyond your press releases. You know, you're getting articles in industry press, but it's those press releases that you're producing once or twice a month. The advent of Google News, Yahoo News, has really expanded the audience and the distribution of these press releases far beyond what we were used to just a few years ago. We've now done a number of case studies, a number of tests of the actual impact of these press releases. And in this case, for example, the marketer Symmetricom measured a very significant degree of clicks from these specific links, excuse me, and you know, think about the information that you have about those folks, because you know what these links are, you know what keyword they just clicked on. That gives you a tremendous amount of power in customizing the content for where they land. So if they're clicking on the atomic clock, you've got a landing page ready and waiting for them. Tim, do you want to talk us through this next example? We're now on slide 13, another SEO landing page.
Sure. So someone coming from this PR piece, they wind up on this landing page. It's a chip scale atomic clock. It's not the kind of thing where I'm going to go out and buy five for my friends and buy now. But it is the sort of thing where you want to give people enough information, which they did, to figure out what this is about, sort of let them learn for themselves. But what you see here, and the really interesting and important thing, is that on the left, where normally people would just sort of leave their default navigation bar in there, it's kind of taking it out and put in a contact us form right there, within the context of this sort of educational materials. And what they found is that they only got 8 leads out of this thing, but one of them wound up being a $200 million order. So, imagine for a moment if they, hadn't put that contact form in there, if they had buried it deeper into the site, and all of a sudden, if 2 of those 8 orders, never made that click, never made it to the contact us page, never submitted their information, all of a sudden this company would have been out, $200 million possibly. So the idea is you really want to make it as easy as possible for someone to just make that split-second decision of giving you the information and moving on and moving deeper into the purchase process.
So you heard it here first. Put a registration form on your landing page. Make $200 million. It's just that.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next major point. And for folks in B2B, your first response will be mobile. Mobile is not something that is a priority for us yet. Maybe it never will be. Well, first let's look at the examples, and then I'll tell you in what regard you might not be on the money with that. So this is the Secrets of Success homepage. This is how it looks on a normal-sized monitor. In this next page, we're now on slide 15, this is that same homepage. So why are we showing this to you? Because in B2B, 64% of decision-makers right now say that they are accessing more than 50% of their own email, of their business email, via a mobile device. So clearly, the market that you want to serve, those people who are most important in the buying committee, those decision makers, these are folks who are taking their time on airplanes, time in limos, their mobile time, and putting it to work use. And so that means that when they are looking through their short list of vendors, they've been handed a short list by someone else, and now they're going to go and take a look. And they're going to go to your website, they're going to look at your About Us pages and your product offerings, and if they have too difficult a time accessing those things with a mobile device, they're simply not going to do it. Beyond that, chances are you've got a house newsletter, you've got email blasts. It is very important that those things render properly on mobile devices. You don't need to have a mobile campaign going. You don't need to worry about SMS, but you do need to worry that your key constituency can make sense of your pages and your emails on mobile devices. All right, so we're in the home stretch here. Before we take a look at some of your real landing page examples and cut them to shreds, so if you can do nothing else, in B2B especially, there are very often constraints of both budget and people hour resources. Here are some of the things that are really holding marketers back. 48% of the folks responding to our survey don't do any A-B testing. That's the simplest form of testing, simply comparing how two pages, one differing element, how those two pages perform. 40% only test at launch and leave forever. That's another big mistake, because one of the effects of search marketing is that campaigns are forever now. unless you take a page down completely, you're going to have that long tail of clicks coming to your landing pages, and it's important not just to launch and forget. And that's true of content updates, and it's true of testing. What we found is that while landing page testing, a course of landing page testing, can have on average a 40% increase in your conversion rate, a cyclical ongoing process has a potential for much, much greater returns. We've seen results in the 200, 400% ultimate improvement in conversion, and there's no reason for that process to stop. Finally, 16%, they're not sharing test results with their agency. Now, Tim, you come from an agency background. Does that number seem maybe a little small to you?
Well, yeah, I mean, while I was working at an agency, we worked some, pretty major online advertisers. That was a pretty consistent bane of ours, where a lot of times our clients just couldn't share stuff with us. A lot of times their IT folks made it difficult for the clients to even get access to the data to share with us. And I mean, really, unless you're, all of your data is tied together from advertising all the way back to sales, it's just really difficult to do much with it. If you're only seeing part of the picture, you can't really affect the whole. So anybody out there, I thoroughly recommend you do share with your agency and try and get as much data shared as possible.
That's right. You can't blame your agency for not doing a good job if you don't give them all the information they need to do it. And this fits perfectly with our final point. Slide number 17, almost 20% of marketers are in a position where no one in their organization knows their landing page results. And, the prospect of fighting for new budget, fighting for testing, fighting for improvement, it's almost impossible to do that without baseline data. And in these days of free analytics of being available, analytics that at the very least, if you're in a position where you don't know your results at all, you will benefit from the most basic of the web analytics packages out there. And no one decision will make you a superstar faster inside your organization than getting this baseline data, and chances are very quickly improving upon it. So one last example on slide 18. What we're looking at here is a classic A-B test, but the point is that you have to look beyond simple clicks, and here's why. In the test, we're looking at two different examples here. On the left-hand side, there's a grid with checkboxes, and on the right-hand side, that's actually one long page that we've split up so that it's visible. And what was interesting here was the example on the left, that got great clicks. It was simple, easy to read, great clicks, much higher than our second example. And if we turn to the next page, we'll see the ultimate winner. It was the longer example. Why? Because the conversion rate for this long page was significantly higher. The longer content got people more involved. Fewer people clicked, but a higher percentage converted. When you multiply those two groups together, the high clicks by low conversions, the lower clicks by higher conversions, in this test anyway, the longer example won. So it's very important to look at those second stage metrics, because it's those metrics that chances are have more to do with how much money you're making, how many leads you're generating, than the clicks up front.
And the second that intersects, Stefan, just back to the previous point we were talking about, sharing data, in this case where with the agency, if they're only seeing the clicks for the one page, whereas the client side is seeing the conversion rate for both pages, there's going to be a difference of opinion. You guys are actually going to come to completely different conclusions about which page is better, because there is that lack of access across all the different data points. Just goes to show right there the point.
Yeah, it's all about communication, and you're absolutely right. I hear from marketers all the time whose organizations are uncomfortable sharing financial and conversion metrics with different types of agency. And you know, if nothing else, you've got to give people an indication of what's happening behind the scenes. Otherwise, they're simply not making informed choices. So great point, and thanks for bringing it up. All right, well, we're going to take just a very quick look. Here is more information, if you need it, on slide 20 about the landing page handbook. There's an immediate download, and then you get the full printed copy. On slide 21, we are looking at happy Sherpas in the mountains. We're holding our third annual email summit in late February in Miami. I don't know how we chose Miami for that date, but that will bring over 800 B2B and B2C email marketers together. We've got different tracks for B2B, of course, and that's our third annual event. So with that, enough marketing. Let me turn it over to John, who's going to tell you a bit about Marketo and some tangible information, which is always good. And right after that, we're going to be taking a look at a few of the real-life landing page examples that you all sent in.
Thanks, Stefan and Tim. That was great information. I really appreciate you sharing that research about landing page best practices. I wanted to talk a little bit about Marketo and also share results from a real-world landing page test that we ran. As you know, Marketo provides, you know, easy-to-use marketing software to help B2B marketers generate and nurture qualified leads, including tools for landing pages, lead management, lead scoring, and email marketing. Some of the key capabilities of our landing page software is that it lets you create landing pages with a WYSIWYG interface. In fact, the screenshot you're looking at is taken directly from Marketo's landing page designer. We think that this tool is actually, you know, very easy and flexible. If you can use PowerPoint, you know, you can use this to create and test your landing pages. What I want to talk about is the results from a real-world test that we ran on this landing page. As you see here, it talks about some of the benefits of the solution. But in particular, I wanted to look at the impact of form length. And so we created three versions of this form and used Marketo's A-B testing capabilities to see the results. If you go to the next slide, you'll see that information. Basically, you see that there was a short form, a medium form, and a long form. After about 1,800 impressions, we basically found that the short form had a 14% conversion rate, the median form an 11% conversion rate, and the long form just a 10% conversion rate. Now, the cost per click to get leads or prospects to this landing page is sort of high. We pay actually $4.78, and we do that because the conversions down the funnel for this page are great. But you can see the resulting cost per conversion from each form, about $34 for the short form. But what's interesting is that going to the median form, the cost per conversion goes up by more than $9. So essentially adding, you know, those two extra fields of information costs $9, quite expensive. Interestingly, when you add the next two incremental fields, cost goes up even further, but by only about half as much. I don't think this means that phone and industry in general are cheaper than you know, size of, you know, number of employees and whether or not the company is a sales force. I think what it means is that anytime you go beyond the most basic name, title, company, email information, you see a big drop in conversions, and then adding incremental fields after that, each one brings you down, but sort of incrementally less as you go. If you go to the next slide titled, But Don't Overtest, we sort of come up to, I think, a very important point. Having too many test versions will mean that it takes a really long time to get anything resembling statistically valid results from your test. Now, this is especially true for B2B companies that don't get dozens or hundreds of conversions. Fortunately, we've created this calculator that makes it easy for you to know exactly how many versions you can test. All you have to do is enter in your information, and Marketo will either tell you how long your test needs to run to get statistically valid results, or if you know the time, how many versions you can run. You can access this calculator for free at marketo.com/calculator. I did want to talk about the free trial of Marketo landing pages. You can sign up right now at marketo.com/free trial for a 14-day trial of our software that helps you create and test landing pages in minutes. And in case you're wondering, Marketo hosts these pages, so you don't need to touch your current site, but we actually host them in your subdomain, so prospects won't know that they aren't part of your site. So just wanted to make sure everyone knew that you can sign up for this, you know, right now from our website. You know, lastly, if you go to the next slide, I do have a final thought to share about landing page conversions. In B2B, the point of the landing page is to capture a lead for sales. But you remember that most of those leads are very early in the buying cycle, and they probably aren't yet ready to talk with a sales rep yet. They're just doing research. In fact, data from Rain Today shows that, on average, only 25% of the leads that you capture off of your landing pages are going to be considered sales ready. You'll probably disqualify, on average, about 25%, but a full 50% of them are going to require further nurturing. So don't just take those leads and dump them to your sales team. If you do that, you'll annoy the lead, and you'll probably create an impression with sales that marketing's leads are no good, leading them to tend to ignore marketing leads even further than they already do. The best practice instead is to use lead management and lead nurturing. You know, score the leads using demographic and behavioral information so you know who's ready for sales, and then create nurturing campaigns that deepen the relationship with those prospects over time, and use behavioral marketing techniques to make sure that you're sending nurturing messages to them based upon the activities and interests that they've shown to you in the past. You know, just remember that, you know, your marketing programs are always changing, so you need to keep those programs flexible and dynamic. If this sounds interesting to you, I'd encourage you to visit marketo.com/beta, where you can sign up to participate in the free beta program for our lead management software. So on that note, I'd like to turn the call back over to Stefan to go through some of the landing pages that you submitted when you signed up for the webinar. The first one is from Pivot3, who's actually one of Marketo's earliest customers. Stefan, what do you think of this page?
Well, I should let folks know that the way this process worked was I received a list of over 100 landing pages by URL, and I went and looked at all of those and picked out some for being good, some for having some issues, and others because they brought up some interesting specific point. Now, I did not know that Pivot3 was a Marketo customer, and fortunately for Marketo, I chose this landing page because I think it's a very good one, and let's talk about why. Number one, it doesn't have any extraneous navigation. We mentioned before that one of the keys to the key pieces of a landing page is how much is there on that page that distracts people from the primary action. And one of the best, most reliable things that you can do to increase landing page conversion is to remove navigation that isn't specific to that action, and that's what we see here. Second, all of the content is above the fold. Now, we'll talk about the fold quite a bit. We've already mentioned it. Having content below the fold is not a killer, but you definitely want your action item and your key pieces of information above the fold. If you can get everything up there, that's ideal, and they managed to do that here. Next, you see that the intro paragraph, very short, goes right into a set of bullet points. We see from virtually all of the eye tracking and usability studies we've conducted support this point that in the online world, people just go right for bullet points to determine the relevance of a page. They do that before they read the titles. They do it much more often than they read the headlines. So another good point there. Also, the hero shots here, the two photographs, totally relevant to the topic. One of my pet peeves on landing pages are the stock photography of the happy young executives. Those things are often put in to spruce up a page, but all they really achieve is distracting people, taking up some of their attention, and if that image isn't relevant, it doesn't move the page forward. Now, the shot on the lower left is quite a powerful shot because it's a close-up. That might actually distract a little bit from, if we were to do an eye-tracking study of this page, I think we would see people come in on the top left, they'd look at the bullet points, and then instead of moving down immediately to the forms, they might move over to that image. That's probably okay because we're in a left-right language, so after that image, they'll probably go right back to the form. And my last point, I like the way there are multiple points of contact. Some people simply want to pick up a phone and get somebody immediately. Others have a question that and they don't want to fill out the form field, so they'll use the email address. Overall, I like this page a lot. John, any closing thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think there's two other things I really like about this page. The first is that when somebody fills out this form, they're not just taking them to the documents immediately. In fact, they're going to be emailing those documents to the person. That's a great trick to help ensure that they get valid email addresses as part of this form. The other thing I like about this page is even though they've taken off the navigation, they still have a link to the bottom to their privacy policy, something that companies should always do, and something that actually Google actually cares about when they're evaluating the quality score of a given page. The one thing that I think that they might do to make this page a little bit better is perhaps to consider having a small short caption underneath the upper right hero shot. As the eye tracking studies you've done in the past, show people are very likely to read the text on a caption even if it's somewhat small.
Great point. All right, well, let's move on to the next one. This is an example from Big Machine. Overall, this is a pretty good landing page, but there were a few things that that I noticed. Now, of course, the red line here, that is the fold as it fell on my machine. I've got this one set up for to be as standard as they come. Of course, everyone's results may vary a bit, but in general, this is where the fall will fold for a lot of folks. The fold, and the problem there is that two things are underneath that fold that really shouldn't be. Number one is the submit button. That's the action item. That's what you want people to hit, and they don't see it when they open the page. The other thing is the you'll see in very small type is the asterisk denoting the required fields. Well, if that falls underneath the fold, and granted, most people know what an asterisk means in this context, but it just seems like a loose end. You know, that's not something that should be underneath all of those form fields that they've already filled out. Other thing is that the page doesn't specifically mention the case study that someone already clicked on. Now, you might think, well, you know, if they've already clicked on a specific case study and this is the registration form, why is that a big deal? Well, what we found with landing pages is that there's a very short period in which to establish relevance. One of the things that does that, just like if you remember with the search phrase being found on the landing page, is to mention the white paper, the case study, the webinar, whatever it is, on all of those action pages, all the way up through that last button, which ideally would say, click here to submit and get your XYZ case study. But at the very least, in that top sentence, it shouldn't be referring to a generic case study. It should be the specific one mentioned, or at least have a list of the case studies, something that establishes relevance. Now, one thing that I do like about this page is that even though it's got extra navigation, a lot of that navigation is in that Get Started Now piece, and there are a lot of good choices there that all have to do with somebody who's in that research process, and you know, if they don't want to get a case study and they're more interested in just requesting information immediately or seeing the demo, those things are all well positioned and they're in a good little marketing package up there. John, what do you think?
I agree with all your points. One other one I would add is just the text on the submit button, which is below the fold. One of my pet peeves is that, don't make your customers submit. There's always the opportunity to have, more descriptive language, in this case, such as download case study.
Great. All right, well, let's take a look at another page, and this is from Jonah, Software for Life. And my main concern here is that this doesn't feel like a landing page. This feels like it's trying to do the work of a home page because there's so many choices here for the person arriving. I'm not quite sure what the page is trying to accomplish. Is it trying to spark a phone call or an email? Or is it trying to get people to click on these other things or go back to the main Jonas construction site? So that lack of clarity is going to be manifest in the clicks that come from this page, I suspect. Beyond that, the design of this page has a distinctly late 90s feel to it, between the color scheme and the way the text renders. you know, I'm not a big one for ultra high-end design, but there is something in a page that looks like this that suggests, you know, I may be dealing with a smaller company, a company that isn't devoting a lot of resources to keeping their look and feel up to date. Depending on your customer base, that might be fine, might also be an issue. So, John, what do you think?
Well, two things I'd point out is just the centering of the text and the sort of column to the right, you know, just off of your sort of late 90s design point, probably would just sort of do better to left, justify that. One thing I really do like about this page are the very prominent partner logos at the bottom. A visitor to the Jonas Construction site, you know, very well may not have, you know, heard of Jonas before, but knowing that they partner with sort of big successful companies lends additional credence and credibility to the brand.
Exactly. All right, well, let's move on. Just a couple of points about this next one, Info Partners. Now, one thing that I like is the very prominent call to action, the, you know, asking folks to call or to email. I like that. In terms of design, this is basically a good page. It's got the bullet points that we look for. One thing that I don't like in terms of the text treatments are the centered headlines towards the bottom. But really, I identified this page because of the URL you see there at the bottom. This is the full URL for this landing page. And this ties into some research we did in search eye tracking in B2B. And one of the interesting findings we had was that the URL length can have a significant effect on attention to an ad. These long server-generated dynamic URLs, because perhaps they don't make any sense to us in terms of the language, they seem to have a real negative effect on the search ad. Worse yet, they have a positive effect on the next ad down. So as you're going through a Google result, you're somewhat more likely to move on to the next ad when one of these URLs appears. So what you ought to be looking for are opportunities to name pages in simple, short, declarative language that that really ties in with the page content. That's not always possible, of course. There are a lot of sites that are a lot larger, but using technology, you don't necessarily need to show folks these very long URLs. But in an ideal world, it would simply be info partners / you know, IT consulting Bay Area, something like, you know, something that makes sense in the English language.
What do you think of the next page?
Okay, so now this page has a very distinct design to it. And, you know, I don't want, you know, sort of personal design sense to affect the call here, but there's a very there's a lot of white space on the left, so much so that at first I thought an image hadn't been served into it. The Green Owl logo is certainly eye-catching. I'm not sure that it needs to be as eye-catching as it is. The size of it is so it's so big that it really dominates the page and the viewer's attention. Now, playing off of that green, you'll see that some of the text and the in the ad itself or in the page itself is in that same green. That's something we'd strongly recommend against. It's hard to see, especially since the second green line down is actually an action item. It's a, you know, click here to watch the video. I wouldn't have that there anyway because it really takes away from the landing page. But if you're going to have it and it's a value add, then make sure it gets seen by adding by using just black text. Also, if you look down just above the fold is the paragraph around the opt-in for receiving more information, promotional offers, et cetera. One thing is that the formatting is such that you've got a very dense, very narrow, tall paragraph. That tends to that doesn't look very good. It doesn't tend to get read very well. And also that paragraph ought to have something about what people are going to receive or not going to receive. When you're simply asking for an opt-in and you see here's an organization that has a lot to offer, it may come to the it may be of concern to a potential subscriber, potential opt-in, that, you know, how much email am I going to get? Am I going to get email from partners? Am I just going to get email from these folks? So these are the kinds of questions that people ask before applying for email accounts these days, and something that can easily be avoided by putting in some descriptive text on what they're going to get, what they're not going to get. Also in there could very likely benefit from having a link to the privacy policy. John, any thoughts on this one?
Nope. I sort of would agree with all your points.
Okay.
How about the last page?
All right. Well, let's move on to the last page. I'm picking on AMC in this case because they're breaking our cardinal submit and clear rule. I've blown up that that sign. Second, you'll already probably have jumped ahead and noticed, hey, the submit button's below the fold. So that's an issue. Now, if you look at the top of the page, you'll notice that there's an image that wasn't served. I reloaded this page a number of times. It may simply be a test page that's on, on a secondary server. This may not really be an issue for these folks if this page goes live. But in my experience with the page, image didn't serve, and that's a good reminder to all of us that these pages shouldn't simply exist out in limbo and not get tested just in terms of their basic usability from time to time. Have someone in the marketing department whose job it is, once a week, go and check out, a string of URLs just to make sure that all of the images are still getting there, that the forms download the white papers that they're supposed to download. Websites behind the scenes are changing, and, some small thing a programmer did at some other part of the site might have affected the way the images were served, and that might have been the result. I think this page could certainly do with a hero shot of the magazine, of the AMC magazine, which is part of the benefit. Finally, in the form fields, one of the requested items is a phone number. In our experience, people are willing to give their phone numbers, but they want to know why. Are they going to start receiving marketing calls? Is that just so you can get in touch if there's a credit card issue? First of all, you really shouldn't be using folks' phone numbers if you can't absolutely avoid it. But if you're going to use them, tell them why. And with that, I think we've looked at all of our examples for today.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Stefan and Tim, for all this great, fabulous advice, information generated from the newly updated and revised landing page handbook. I'm sure everyone really appreciates all this information.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
Great.
And we're out.